Hi, this is Katie Day, and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh. Sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Colleen Guy. Colleen has worked in business for most of her life, starting in banking, before she moved to consultancy, and then ran her own HR training and coaching company. She specialised in executive and leadership development, working with large corporates as well as small businesses, all with the aim to increase effectiveness and help the businesses and individuals grow and be even more successful. Alongside her corporate work, Colleen developed her shamanic practice, and her journey started many years ago, first by exploring NLP, and then to Sedona in Arizona, where she learned shamanic practices, experiencing the Native American traditions, and then to Hawaii with the kahunas. Since then, she has brought these teachings back to the UK and combined them with her own Celtic shamanic traditions. Colleen is passionate about using these practices in everyday life, simple, effective, and powerful techniques for this lifetime. As a shamanic practitioner, she works with many people from different walks of life, using these techniques in workshops and for coaching. She is a wife, mother, and grandmother, and has now left corporate life, concentrating on her shamanic work. Welcome, Colleen. Thank you very much for being interviewed.
Thank you, Katie.
I've experienced your shamanic workshop.
Yes, you have.
Which was fascinating. And yeah. I've been to Sedona a few times. Uh-huh. It is the most amazing place, isn't it?
It is. It's just a wonderful place to go and explore so many different places there and people who are following different paths. Mm. So it's not all shamanic. But it is so interesting, and it enables you to experience other things and then decide whether that's for you or not. So it's such an eclectic mix is what I describe it.
It's very inclusive and accepting, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Extremely so. It doesn't matter what you do, where you do it, or how you look. Nobody is bothered. Nobody's fazed. So you can let all those defences down I suspect anybody who's worked in corporate life, you know, you have that sort of your corporate persona where you can get rid of anything like that and be who you really are.
And the energy there is incredible.
It is wonderful. There's some vortexes. Yeah. You've got the red hills. You've got all of that fabulous stuff out there.
Amazing. Hawaii I've never been to, but I've always wanted to and always feel drawn. Mm. What's the difference in Hawaii to Sedona?
Well, in all honesty, the basic principles of shamanism are the same, but each culture puts its own cultural tones on it and puts it in the context of where they are. So if you're looking at plant shamanism, you've got different plants in Sedona to Hawaii. So they use different plants, but the purpose and the intention is all the same. There's a lot more water around in Hawaii. than there was in Sedona. Yeah. Sedona, you know, you compare the two, you've got dry dust, but wonderful magic and experiences going on. And then in Hawaii, you've got this wonderful ocean around you. And of course, you haven't got the vortexes and the red hills, but what you do have is the volcanoes. We were lucky enough to walk the volcano crater, which was an amazing experience. And you have to follow the paths that the rangers have set for you. You can't deviate. Yeah. And you sort of do it with an air of reverence. There wasn't much talking. For sure. Mm. But I did notice as we were going along, there was a tiny little flower growing all on its own. And I thought that sort of symbolises struggle, doesn't it? But in the face of adversity, this flower was going
amazing
to be in the midst of all this lava. It was It's really special.
It makes you realise how incredibly powerful nature is.
Yeah, and how you can survive in all sorts of circumstances.
Yeah. That's what I love about spring, is when you see the most delicate, tiny shoots.
Oh, yeah.
So determined to have a life that they will push through this rock hard, almost cement ground just to be seen and to kind of have their own voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you realise actually you don't have to be big and strong to have an impact on the world, do you? Sometimes fragility is... And vulnerability is more powerful than strength.
I think you're absolutely right. Tapping into that vulnerability is definitely a good thing.
It is.
Yeah.
How did you come by and get interested in shamanism? Is it something that came later in your life, or was it something that's been with you all your life?
Well, I suppose I had sort of a normal life, really, with the children, marriage, work. But as a child, I was always drawn to other things. I had a very vivid imagination when I was little, and I used to play act a lot. And I didn't believe that you couldn't do anything. I believed you could do what you wanted. And
what a great way to go through life.
Well, you know, I sort of realised when I went to school that not everybody thought that way, and things were slightly different. I can remember Mum saying to me, "Look, dear, it's best not to be too different." Okay. So I think I just went through life, but I was always aware that there was something more. But it wasn't until I had my children quite young, so it wasn't until they were grown up that I started to think, right, now I'll resume my journey and find out where I want to go.
Interesting.
So
how old were you when that happened?
I was late 30s.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then did something really, well, it wasn't silly, but I was working in business. So I decided to do a master's degree on the advice of a mentor.
Right.
Which I did. But really, I wanted to go and do something much different from a master's degree. So I did it and then went off and did my own stuff.
And what was your own stuff?
Well, I wanted to find out why I felt the way I did and why I always thought that there was more to life than I had.
Right.
And I thought there was more out there. And somebody left me a leaflet on my desk. I was working in the city. This leaflet appeared and it was all about NLP. But it also, attached to the course, was timeline therapy and hypnotherapy.
Ah.
So I saw this. It was about 10 days before the course started. And I just thought, I'm going.
Mm.
So it must have been set up, you know. I must have been meant to go on this course. I'll get my words out in a minute. Because I phoned up and booked on it and managed to get the time off work.
Wow.
For 7 days.
Wow.
In a very short time. So nobody stood in my way, interestingly enough. And I went on the practitioner course and I thought, right, next step up, I'll do the master practitioner course. I did that. And then I thought, no, there's still more. And then I came across a course called The Secret Science Behind Success.
Oh, good title.
And I thought, right,
I'll
have a go at that as well. And that was the one that started me looking at other things. It wasn't pure shamanic work, but there were things like the tarot and numerology working out how your thoughts and your words sabotage what it is you want to achieve. So that was the next stage. And then there was a guest speaker who came along and she did a lot of shamanic work in the States. And I thought, that's where I'm going next.
Wow.
And so that's how I ended up.
Fascinating.
Getting out to Sedona to explore shamanism. And I worked with her and obviously others in Sedona. And then she ran two more workshops out in Hawaii. And that's where, so I did those, and that's where I met the kahuna, Lopaka, who was kahunas are the Hawaiian shamans.
Right.
So, and actually I was really lucky because my husband Keith came with me on all these workshops.
Did he?
Yeah. So not the ones in the UK, interestingly enough, but he came to the States and Hawaii with me.
Yeah, I wonder why. He's not so easy.
No, he's not really. But we were flying back after the second workshop from Hawaii and I had one of those aha moments. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, you know, this has been a fantastic journey and I've learnt loads, but it's no good me learning about plants in Hawaii. I can't grow them in my garden.
Yeah.
And the practices and the way they do it there wouldn't fit with our culture as much.
Right.
So I then started to explore Celtic shamanism.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
Well, Celtic shamanism, it is quite tribal, or was quite tribal. You know, we used to live in tribes, and we were covered in trees, weren't we, in England centuries ago. And everything was taught mouth to ear.
Right.
So, you know, you learned mouth to ear. So we haven't got an awful lot written down. There are bits and pieces, obviously. And so I started to read and did some workshops and explore more about our nature, how nature affects us, how we affect nature. And then looked at not changing the basic of the shamanic practices, but putting it into the context of our culture. And the fact that some people who come to my workshops live in cities and in flats.
Yeah.
So you can't go and ask them to paddle in the ocean to connect with water. You know, so you have to think about, so how do we do it here when we haven't readily got an ocean available to us, or we haven't got a mountain to climb, or we can't go on a vision quest in the middle of the desert?
Mm-hmm.
So you start to think, how would we have done it over here, and how do we want to do it now? But the core basic principles of shamanism, the actual core techniques and disciplines, if you take them all down, are the same.
Right. That's interesting, because I was having a conversation recently with someone about religion.
Mm.
And with all the different religions that there are out there throughout the world, if you actually strip them down, the core message is the same.
Absolutely.
It's just a different way of presenting and communicating the same core message.
It is. It is.
So shamanism is the same.
It's the same.
Yeah.
You can read back in some of the textbooks back to when shamanism first started. But one of the great writers, Michael Hana, he coined the phrase core shamanism. And he said, you know, when you bring it into your own culture, you start to put your own traditions on it. And but the core bit is the same, but you start bringing it into your own culture.
How aligned is it with paganism and druidism?
Oh, it's very aligned, really. I mean, the druids believe that everything is alive, has an anima. So so do shamans.
Okay.
So everything is alive, everything has a purpose, and you respect all living things. And that includes plants as well. And the pagans, they still have their own rituals, their own ceremonies. It still comes from the same beliefs. Down in Hastings, we have the wonderful pagan ceremony, Jack in the Green.
It's fabulous.
Amazing. Yeah. But if you look, people have got drums, they've got rattles, which are core shamanic tools. It's all fun and life. It's a ritual. It's a ceremony. And it has a purpose. The intention is to release the spirit of spring. So that is quite shamanic. So I think they've all sort of sprouted up, but then got different titles on.
They have. It's what I see as a difference, is my perception, is that if you were talking about Druidism or paganism or shamanism or Buddhism.
Yes.
Buddhism, slightly apart, we'll come back to that one. But the other three, it's more a way of life as opposed to a religion.
Yes.
Religions tend to be associated with a person or a being, whether that's a physical being or a spiritual being.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, you've got Christianity, you've got both.
Yeah.
You've got the spiritual being and yes. you've got the physical being.
Yeah.
Buddhism, which is why I bring Buddhism back in, because it's about a physical being, Buddha. Mm. However, their beliefs are around everything has a spirit.
Yeah.
And be good to every living being, whether you know that's a plant or an animal or a human being. Mm. Whereas these are very much linked, or where I see the difference is Druidism, paganism and shamanism are linked to nature and the cycles of the earth,
yeah.
as opposed to a being that may or may not exist or have existed. And it's a connection with the earth rather than something that has been thought up in inverted commas, and this is not my opinion, this is just putting it out there, of man creating something around a human being, which religions come from. So that's the difference, and it's that which is why I think the nature related beliefs have survived and still continue to flourish, because nature is eternal.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And also, we can't argue with it.
No, we can't.
However clever we think we are, the seasons are going to be happening anyway.
it's interesting you say that, because when we do a shamanic ceremony, we always start by bringing in the spirits of the directions. So yeah. the spirits of the east, south, west and north, Mother Earth and Father Sky. So in some ways we actually put something there. So for the east we will be saying we welcome the spirits of the east, the spirits of air, but we're still putting it back into an element, but nevertheless we are using that sort of terminology. And of course the other thing that you've got coming in quite a lot is Wicca. Now in Wicca traditions you do have gods and goddesses.
Okay.
But you use them for specific purposes. So there, Brigid is a big Celtic goddess who was worshipped, has been worshipped through the centuries. She's a triple goddess, which means she encompasses the maiden, mother and the crone. And she supports, if you wanted support, with healing, poetry and craft work.
Right.
So if you were following Wicca traditions, you would call upon Brigid to help you with a new project, perhaps, or something you're making with your hands. So and Wicca, there are a lot of similarities between shamanism.
Ah, interesting.
So, yeah. So again, there are some crossovers there. So, but the gods and goddesses that they recognise and call on are called on for a specific purpose.
I see.
So there isn't one that encompasses everything.
Right.
And even in shamanism, we have our spiritual guide and mentor who is a human. It's in human form. And that can be a mythical god or goddess. Mm. So there are some areas where we cross over a little bit, but we do not have one god.
So it's not a one-stop shop.
No,
one god is expected to do everything.
No. You pick the one.
You pick the one that's going to help you.
That's going
to
help you.
Whether you go to your GP or whether you go to a specialist.
Exactly. it's much the same thing. And of course, there were lots of Celtic gods and goddesses.
Yeah.
So we've got all that around here as well, you know, in our traditions. So there isn't a dividing line between everything, but the whole essence of it, if you boil it all down, it's not doing any harm to anyone, having respect for everything, and especially Mother Earth, who's so good to us, and all living things on her.
It is it is respect. What I like particularly about the old ways of thinking and being, I won't call them religions, but you know, whether it's Druidism or paganism or shamanism, is that it's very much about respect, as are religions actually. If you if you bring down all organized religions, it's all about respect and love. But what I particularly like is about it is the respect for the earth.
Yes.
And what I find fascinating about human nature is how arrogant it can be.
Yeah.
that we think because we're top of the food chain. Oh, really? You think? Have you been near a volcano when it's erupting? Yeah. We're so not top of the food chain, but we think we're top of the food chain with animals, in inverted commas, that actually we know everything and actually we know nothing.
No.
And that Mother Earth, we are just fleas that every now and again she'll have a good scratch and get rid of a whole load of us because there's too many of us.
That's it.
And we're making her itch too much and we're actually a bit of an irritant. Oh. And we haven't quite figured that one out yet.
No, we haven't. There is a huge movement in the shamanic world to heal Mother Earth.
Mm.
And there's lots of things being done globally in a community. Mm. And that's the beauty now of the internet and being able to all work together.
Yeah. Do you think we're close to getting to that collective tipping point where we can make a difference?
I think we are. I think we are making a difference. And I always wonder how the world will be if we didn't do any of this.
Yeah,
and of course, we'll never know.
We'll never know.
But I really do think we make a difference because of the energy that we put out. Mm. And quantum physics says that energy gathers on similar energy and keeps building and building. Yeah. Hence, you get, you know, the big waves and tsunamis and all things. Yeah. So if we're putting out positive energy, then that will attach to other positive energy and it will keep rolling. Which is why you have to be really careful of your thoughts and words.
Oh, my gosh, you have to, don't you?
Yeah.
Something I just want to ask what your view is, your feeling, your opinion. There was a big thing, wasn't there, with 2012, end of the world.
Oh, yeah.
I can remember writing an article in the approach to that, interestingly, for a Canadian internet magazine.
Oh.
Which is a very, I mean, talk about, you know, left brain business. And was 2012 the end of the world, or is it?
Yeah.
This was just my opinion.
Yes.
That it wasn't the end of the world, but it was the end of a certain way of being, a certain way of existing on this planet was dying.
Yeah.
And actually a new way of thinking and being was about to take over.
Mm-hmm.
So it was going from the very masculine to the more feminine, which, and I'm not saying masculine way of being or thinking is bad, because it isn't, but it is a certain way. And that's not also men running the world. It's just because women can be just as masculine, actually. We all have that energy within us. So it was the masculine energy that was being, maybe was at the tipping point, and it was a more conscious, if you like, to make it simplistic, feminine way of existing and being. And my feeling is that's why we're seeing so much turmoil around the world since 2012, because it's like the death throes of the old stag who knows the young buck is about to take over but isn't going to go down without a fight. So it's that, which is why I asked you about that collective tipping point. Do you think that actually it is just a different way of being and existing on this planet needs to be the shining light and the guiding force for us all? And do you think we're getting there with that?
Okay, I totally agree with you. 2012 was never going to be the end of the world.
No.
A lot of people said it was the end of the world because the Mayan calendar stopped.
Yep.
But actually, you know, it was always going to stop somewhere.
Fair enough.
At some time, you know. And they didn't say it was the end of the world. But I think it was the end of the world, or the end of the way we were in the world.
Yeah.
We did have a lot of uprisings where people were overthrowing oppressive regimes.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that some have slipped back, but that really started the feeling that collectively you can do something. Mm. And I do believe that those of us that follow shamanic practices or anything of that ilk have got to continue with the work, because it is the way we are going to change. I think the feminine energy is coming up, but it needs to balance. Again, everything is about harmony and balance. We need male and female energy. But it has been a little bit heavily male. And now I think the tipping point is that the feminine energy is coming up. And there is this collectiveness and community.
Mm.
Those are the words that I hear a lot now. There are people coming together in community and doing this work.
Mm.
And that will definitely continue. And I think that's going to gather more momentum. I mean, I've noticed it since I moved down here. I started off not really knowing anybody. I now am on the verge of putting a limit on the numbers who I can take.
Gosh.
Because, and I'm coming to think, how do I do that? And do I do it? Or do I run twice as many so I can, because I've got limited space. Or maybe I have to get more space. So, you know, it's all those things you start to think about, that there must be other ways, and so I think people are open to it. I think people recognise that we have to change our approach. We have to change the way we treat Mother Earth, or she won't continue to look after us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She's extremely benevolent, but then she throws a wobbly. The Earth's vibration and the heartbeat of the Earth has definitely shifted over the last couple of months.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So say more about that. That's fascinating.
Well, when you follow shamanic practices, you tune into the heartbeat of the Earth.
Right.
Shamans drum and rattle, and they do it to alter their beta waves so that they go into almost a light trance.
Mm-hmm.
But as you drum, you actually start to drum in harmony with the heartbeat of the Earth. You can feel it.
Oh, wow.
So, and a lot of who I call the big shamans, who are hugely powerful, and I enjoy listening to them and reading what they have to say. They were all talking about the shift. And interestingly enough, there is rather a lovely meditation that you do to connect back to the heartbeat of the Earth, so that you start beating in sympathy with her again.
Goodness.
And if you ever do a search on the internet for the Indigenous grandmothers, there's a big circle of grandmothers from the Indigenous tribes, and they're very interesting and point you in the right direction. And they're hugely learned. And they have got a lineage, a shamanic lineage, which a lot of us don't have.
Yeah.
Or if we have, we're not aware of it.
Yeah. So when you say it's changed, it's shifted, what do you mean by that?
I mean that, and the Earth does shift on its axis. You know, that's scientifically proven.
Yeah.
I think they were saying it shifted when Japan had problems. It had shifted slightly on its axis. So the heartbeat has just, a bit like when our heartbeat goes a little faster or a little slower, it's just changed its vibration a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. And so if you want to tune in, and if you want your practices to really make a difference, you tune into the heartbeat of the Earth. And that is a classic shamanic practice.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's something that we did over the last two workshops.
Gosh.
So we did a shamanic journey.
Yeah.
And tuned in to we actually journeyed to the Cave of the Ancient Ones and then tuned in to the heartbeat of the Earth.
Does that heartbeat give you messages, insights into what we need to be doing?
Yes. It's interesting. When you go on a shamanic journey, you don't get a list of bullet points that you that you pick up and say, "Oh, right, okay, I can do 1 to 6 today and I'm finished." It doesn't quite work like that. The messages you get are quite... are not always readily apparent.
Okay.
You get symbols, or you get a sign, or you get a feeling, or you get a voice with just a couple of words. And then it's up to you to work out what it means. So don't make it so easy for you that you get this. But you get insights into what it is that you need to do. And we did have some quite insightful stuff come through on the last two workshops.
Yeah.
And that was really, really useful. Because that means you can continue that practice. Mm. So you take away with you and then you incorporate what you've learned into your own shamanic practice. Mm. So, you know, people might come to me for workshops, but then they go back and do things on their own.
Yeah.
So you take these insights with you and build on them.
Because I remember when I did the introduction to shamanism with you a few years ago, it was 2 days.
Yeah, that's right.
And the journeying, which was amazing.
Mm.
What I wondered, because you, and also it's very easy when you come out of that journey experience to then to start to question.
Mm.
So what was that? Where did that come from then? Well, and was I making it up?
Yeah.
Was it my, did that really happen or was it my imagination?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it, so when we, because you go to the lower world and the upper world.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Is it getting in touch with ancestors or our spirit guides and our spirit animals?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it actually our subconscious that we've squashed in day-to-day living and we're just giving it the space to actually tell us everything that we need to know, but we don't shut up and stop long enough in everyday life to hear?
Okay. You are partially right. The unconscious, I call it unconscious or subconscious. Yeah. It doesn't matter, but as long as you, it's the same thing. So your unconscious mind... your unconscious is hugely powerful. It never sleeps. Mm. It looks after you. It keeps you safe. It's got loads of reasons to be.
Mm.
Whereas your conscious mind goes to sleep and sleeps when you do. And it's more linear.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. You are tapping into your unconscious, but. There's a collective unconscious as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you're tapping into your unconscious and the collective unconscious.
Ah, okay.
The other thing about shamanic practices is that even the great shamans say that one of the things you do is dream the world the way you want it to be.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, okay. And they say we should be dreaming more about how we want things to be. So actually, they're encouraging you to use your imagination because shamans believe that everything that exists in the physical world started in the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
So if you dream the world the way you want it to be, you are putting out that energy to change, to effect change.
Yeah.
So that's... So... Go back to your question, was I making it up? It's your unconscious giving you messages. Some people see things when they journey. Some people only hear things. Some people feel it. Some people sense it. Not everybody has the experience of being in a movie. And different ways and different things come to you. So you experience things the way that you take in information. Because you have a preference and your unconscious gives you that information.
In a way that you can make sense of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then translate it into the appropriate action that you can take.
And of course, when you journey, it is like a meditation, but it's like a, it's almost semi-trance-like.
Mm, it is.
Yeah. And so you are going much deeper into the unconscious realms and you're stepping into an alternative consciousness, an alternative world.
It's about, I suppose, it's a form of creative thinking, isn't it? You know, and what makes me really sad is how many children in school are told off for daydreaming.
Mm.
And daydreaming is absolutely critical.
Of course
it is. It's crucial. Yes. We have to daydream.
Yes, we do.
Einstein, who said, you know, I don't know, probably. He loads of quotes are...
There's loads of quotes.
I'm sure probably only said about 10% of them. But but how important daydreaming and the imagination is. Because what you're doing is creating your future history, aren't
exactly.
you? With the daydreaming. Yeah. And it's allowing your subconscious to change the autopilot.
Yeah.
And think, oh, that's quite compelling and fun. I think we'll change direction. We'll go after that. That looks a lot more fun than that where we were heading. So it's incredibly important and part of our emotional And mental well-being,
yes,
is the ability to imagine and to daydream.
It is, absolutely.
We wouldn't have landed on the moon if somebody didn't have an amazing imagination or daydream that it might be possible. I mean, nothing would really get done, would it? No. But it's really vilified, isn't it? It's really criticised.
Daydreaming is criticised in our educational system.
Yeah.
And it is so wrong. And doodling is another thing.
Yes.
You should be allowed to doodle. Every child should have a pad to doodle on while they're being taught. Because you the way you learn, it's your unconscious that takes in the learnings, not your conscious mind.
Of course it is,
So you need to jam your conscious mind a bit. So, you know, your conscious mind can get on with the doodles while your unconscious is taking in all the information. So, you know, really shamanism is teaching you to use your unconscious mind much more than you are used to doing, and recognizing how powerful that unconscious is.
It could be quite scary to some people, though.
Yes, yeah.
Because you can't control it the way you can control the conscious mind.
No, you can't, but you can learn to work with it.
Ah, okay.
And so that's the difference. You can learn to work in harmony with your unconscious mind. And so learning how your language and your thoughts affect what your unconscious does is hugely important.
Mm.
Yeah. And thinking about what it is you're putting out there, if you can believe that what births into the physical world starts inside you, then you start to think then, so what am I giving off? What am I thinking about? What are my thoughts doing that is creating the world?
It's incredibly powerful. What I've witnessed over the last 18 months of my life is when I let go of control, when I allowed my unconscious / subconscious mind to have a stronger voice, and I quietened the conscious control freak within me, and I became more accepting and more organic in the way I did things, was how much more powerful and how much more quickly my thoughts manifested.
Yes.
And that really hit me about a year ago. I was having a discussion with somebody about something that I had been thinking about that afternoon. I was offered it. I thought, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
And that really made me realise the more you get in tune with this, the quicker the manifestations come. And we have to be so careful about what we think.
Yeah.
So careful.
You have to focus on what you want, not what you don't want.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you get what you don't want.
Absolutely.
So there's lots of things that you have to think about.
It's incredibly powerful. And you think all of that energy, how do we get, in the most efficient and speedy way possible, the message out there to everybody of how important your thoughts are to get that shift?
How do we? Well, I think I think we've got to continue to do it by osmosis, really. You've got to continue to touch people, make them aware of it, and then they make others aware. You've got to keep that ripple effect going.
Yeah.
Standing up on a big platform and saying, it doesn't work always. You know, people, you have to sit with people, explain it to them.
Mm.
There's a huge interest in shamanism now in the West. There's always been elsewhere, but over here now, there is huge interest. People are looking for, as I did all those years ago, they're looking for something else.
Yeah.
They're looking for something that will make a difference. They don't like what they see, and so they're looking for other ways of being. And so they're curious.
Mm.
And once people are curious, they start looking. And you've only got to start doing a little bit of search, which is open to us so easily nowadays. And you come across all this brilliant stuff that's out there. And then it's about doing something with it. You know? It is about taking it and making part of your life and living a shamanic life by shamanic principles.
What difference has it made to your life and how you live it?
It's made a huge difference to my life. It made a huge difference when I was in corporate life. You mentioned control. Well, I was one of those women who I power dressed, as we all did,
yeah,
and still do when we're in corporate life. And you had to compete all the time. So you were in control and you never let anything through. Mm-hmm. And you became highly successful. But what I found now is I'm successful in a different way.
Right.
So I can be just as successful, but I don't have to do it the way I did. And losing the notion that if I lose control, it's going to be a horrible place to be. I'm still getting there. Control is still something I want to pull back at on occasions, but I'm beginning to really let go of the need to control everything in my life and to just accept things, which has been quite liberating, actually.
It
gives you a lot more freedom.
It's also scary.
It is scary. It's a bit like stepping off.
Yeah,
stepping off into the unknown. If you know the tarot, there is the first one of the tarot where he's stepping off with a little dog behind him and he's looking up like that and he's stepping off a cliff. And it's a bit like that, really.
Yeah, it is. It's that faith, isn't it?
Yeah, it's faith.
How much do we trust ourselves?
Yeah. And so you have to trust yourself. You have to love yourself. Mm. You have to learn to treat everything with respect. Mm. And you have to... Even if you don't like that, it's difficult. You don't dislike a person. Actually, that person is probably really nice. You dislike the behaviour. So it's separating the person from their behaviour.
Interesting.
And recognising it's the behaviour that you deal with. The person is probably absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
But you just don't like the behaviour that manifests.
Yeah.
And the other thing, of course, that shamans encourage you to do is to let go of ego.
That's a tough one.
And that is a very tough one.
Yeah.
And so there are techniques you use to let go of your ego and reduce yourself to nothing. And then...
That's really showing your soft underbelly to the world, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But it's, again, it's actually quite liberating. And... freedom has always been one of my strong values. Mm. Freedom, if you try and box me in, forget it. Mm. I've always wanted to be that free spirit and have freedom. And actually learning to let go of ego, and I have to keep doing this, believe you me, you know, because it comes back and then I do it again, has given me so much more freedom. Freedom to be who I want to be, really, and do what I want to do. In a long line, this in the shamanic life that I'm living, as opposed.
That's really interesting. Something that just popped into my head then is when I'm taking people through public speaking or networking workshops, the key theme running through is let go of your ego.
Mm.
Take the spotlight off you, because it's not all about you.
Yeah, that's right.
Put the spotlight on to either the people who are going to be listening to you or the people you are going to meet when you go into that networking situation. Because if you take the spotlight off you and you put it on them, you radiate a completely different energy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then you draw people to you like a magnet rather than repel them. Because But do you not think that sometimes the ego can be our biggest protector? It can keep us safe in certain situations?
I'm not sure. I think our ego will often think we're invincible, actually we're not.
No, we're not.
We're quite vulnerable. And we started this, didn't we, talking about the vulnerability?
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, we need to be happier showing our vulnerability and accepting it. Your comment about, you know, we think we're the top of the food chain. Well, actually, we're not really. We're diddly squat. There might be a lot of us. But,
you know, you really are diddly squat.
Really, no, we're nothing actually. We're a tiny, tiny, tiny grain of sand in terms of time and things. And so we don't really need to have these big egos. Mm. you know, the I ams. It, we don't really need that.
Have you read Daring Greatly?
No.
It's a great book. Brené Brown, Daring Greatly. Okay. No, it's all about vulnerability.
Ah, okay.
From a control freak. Huh? It's a great book. Sorry, I should have said that. I should take a sip of water.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's it's a good book. Almost
good book. Yeah. And she's done an amazing TED Talk as well.
Oh, has she?
On vulnerability.
Okay. Yeah,
incredible.
All right. Listen to that one.
And it's amazing how much stronger we are when we allow ourselves to step into our vulnerability.
Oh, absolutely. I find a lot of inner strength that I wasn't aware I had. Mm. And I think that's really shown me that you don't need to have this control and control everything. And you're missing so much. You know, so many people go through this life with tunnel vision. Mm. And they just need to relax and take that away. And look at what's around and what opportunities there are. They don't notice things going on. Mm. They're just 9 to 5. Mm. But you just expand your consciousness and see what else there is around you.
It's fascinating. Mm. From my perspective, being in control, that I was operating from my headspace and I was living in fear.
Mm. Mm.
Because I was terrified if I let go of a minuscule bit of control that my life would fall apart.
Yeah.
And it's only when I realised that actually it was the control that was keeping me unsafe.
Mm.
And the moment I allowed and started operating from my heart centre rather than from my head, and I let go of control of actually how much more control I had over my life.
Mm. Yeah. I totally agree with
you. Who are you?
Yeah. We have all this going on in our heads. If you know anything about the chakra system, we've got all this, our chakras, our top three, we hold everything there. We forget about the heart chakra, and then we've got our solar plexus, and we've got our sacral, and we've got our grounding chakra. And they all need to be working for energy to flow through us. Yeah. So, you know, if you want to be in control of anything, try and be in control of your chakras.
Yeah.
And get them all working.
Get yourself in balance.
Absolutely. Mm. And when you go out of balance, you're working on this stuff, you really know it. Mm. But you also know how to sort it out.
Yeah.
And so much disease in this at this time is down to out of balance.
Mm.
I'm not saying everything is, but shamans do believe that there is a lot we could do to heal ourselves. Mm. And I've seen people shift and change through going through the shamanic work. Mm. And there's been some really powerful shifts. And people have let go of stuff. Mm. In letting go of stuff, suddenly the odd pain and things have gone because they've just shed other things.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're so connected. If you've got one chakra not working, well, you know, your energy's not going to go where it should do. Mm. It's a bit like motor. You know, you've got these channels go right down your spine. And it's like a motorway. You've got all these little, you've got service stations on it. So, you know, if you run out of petrol before you get to a service station, you've had it.
Yeah.
And that's like your chakras.
I love that. That's really, yeah. Everybody can relate to that one.
That's it. Yeah. You know, so if you think about that, you need everything working to get the energy going and fuel and everything you need in this world.
We're all busy, 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 busy all the time, aren't we?
We are busy, busy.
We're too busy doing and we don't be enough.
We're definitely right there. We need to be a little bit more.
We need to be a little bit more, yeah. And I'm saying that as a note to self.
Note to self.
So what do you do? We've got about a minute and a half left. Mm. Amazingly, that's like 5 minutes. How do you work with people with your shamanic practice?
Okay. I do workshops, but I keep them to small numbers so I can help individuals. And I also do one-to-ones.
Right.
So, and there's a variety of reasons. Often what people come to me for is not real. What they tell me is not really why they're sitting in front of me.
Yeah.
But the typical things are that they're feeling run down, mm-hmm. worn out. They feel as if they've lost their power.
Right, yeah.
They don't quite put it in that terminology, but that's the simplest way. So something's gone, something's missing.
Right.
Also, if they've had a trauma in their lives mm-hmm. or death of a loved one, in shamanism, we believe that you give away parts of yourself.
Right.
So we have a way to get lost soul parts back to make you whole again. And that's the classic soul retrieval. So we would do a soul retrieval work with an individual. So they don't have to have done any shamanic practices.
Mm.
But actually what I like to do is do a knowledge transfer, which is my corporate life coming back in. So I like to help people do things for themselves. So I will always give them some techniques to use. I don't believe in doing it to people. I think they have to participate and take away something to continue the work.
Yeah.
And that's another way of the ripple effect.
Yeah. 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 So it's sustainable for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because the ultimate aim, I guess, is to make people self-sufficient. That they can continue to heal themselves. Otherwise, you're creating a dependency, aren't you? Which isn't healthy for someone.
No. Yeah. And learning to access that divine light inside of themselves that we've all got, that we do, that, you know, we don't realise, we don't fan it enough.
We don't.
No. And so shine that divine light, because light is a marvellous healer.
Thank you. Shine your divine light. That is a brilliant way to end an amazing interview. Thank you, Colleen.
Thank you, Katie.
We all need to go out and shine our light.
Shine our divine light.
This has been Katie Day, and you've been listening to Creating Ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women over 50 are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.